This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up, New Orleans. It is time for Saints game day. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Cullen Steele taking you to the Bud Light Countdown, the kickoff, which will start at 10 a.m. and then kickoff in MetLife Stadium between the Giants and Saints with Deuce McAllister, Mike Hoss on the call, happening at high noon. And hopefully it's a little bit warmer there today. I know the upper northeast area there is dealing with some chilly temperatures. We'll check in with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak in the second hour, get an idea of what it's like there in the stadium. I know MetLife has a tendency to have those swirling winds inside, so curious to know what the flags are up to today on top those field goal posts as these teams get ready to square off. And, well, guys, not a very sexy matchup when you have a 4-8 squad versus a 2-10 New York Giants squad. But, you know, the playoff hopes and dreams are still slightly alive for the Saints. So we're still kind of invested in trying to win the NFC South. As, you know, I know it seems unlikely, but it's still possible.
You got to win this game. I mean, that's
got to win one
point.
To win two, right?
You know, the Giants are so bad. They're 2-10. They're a disaster. And let's start with, you know, the injury update. Malik Nabers, what popped up, a hip flexor injury on Thursday. He didn't practice on Friday.
Yeah.
ESPN's Adam Schefter tweeted last night that he's going to try to play. It's a groin issue that's apparently been lingering for him, but he'll try to play versus the Saints this afternoon. But he's basically going to be a game-time decision. It's game warm-ups. So we'll see how he's kind of feeling. And according to Schefter, who tweeted this morning, they're not going to be shutting him down for the year, basically. And he's been a gigantic bright spot. The former first-round pick out of LSU leads the team in basically every kind of receiving category as far as receptions and targets and yards. He's got 116 targets on the year, Steve. That's a ton, especially for a rookie. 75 receptions, 740 yards.
Feed your first-round pick, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's been the guy, right, on their offense. And their offense has really struggled this year. You know, we all know what happened with Daniel Jones in the quarterback situation. Drew Lock is going to be playing QB for them, just like he did on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. So their QB situation is no bueno. They're looking to the 2025 draft for their QB. But as far as Malik Nabers, it's been a stud for him. Tyrone Tracy, another rookie, the running back, has been really solid for him this year. But it's like, how many pieces do they really have that scare you, right?
Right.
And there's a reason that they're 2-10.
Looking at our LCMC Health update, LCMC Health, 8 hospitals, 1 promise of keeping you well. For the Saints, out this game is Nick Saldiveri. He's dealing with a knee issue. Also, Bub Means was limited on Wednesday and then didn't practice Thursday and Friday as he's trying to come back from an ankle issue. Saints being super cautious with him. He is also out for this matchup. Questionable for this game, Tano Passanio, who was a full go at practice all week. They're still being cautious with the defensive lineman as he's coming back from an Achilles injury. And then one I am anxious for today, Charlie and Cullen, Kendra Miller, the running back. Hamstring issue, was a full go at practice all week. He is questionable for this game, but I think you, me, everybody knows this is like do or die time for Kendry, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he has and what he can put on the field today, and if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I used it for the Sunday Sports today when I was recording last night with the Kendry Miller. Darren Rizzi said it's been a very frustrating year for him, been a very frustrating year for the organization.
They want a training
camp. Very frustrating year for fans when it comes to Kendry Miller, because they know the talent that the kid has. There's a reason they took him in the third round. He just can't stay healthy. So there was all this kind of buzz as well that he didn't think he deserved to be put on IR after suffering that hamstring injury, I believe, versus the Chargers. So apparently, I mean, Rizzi said it on the Saints coaches show this past week that he's quote-unquote chomping at the bit to get back, and he really wants to prove himself. And what better opponent to do against this Giants defense? The Giants defense is not good against the pass, and it's not good against the run. And once again, it's the reason that they're 2-10 this year.
Sadly, when, yeah, you look at yards per carry given up, the Saints and G-men are tied right there at the bottom of the NFL.
Yeah, but as far as total yards per game allowed, the Saints defense hasn't been good either. As you mentioned, ranks 25th in the NFL, 136 yards allowed per game. But the Giants are even worse. They're at 145.8 yards per game, which is 28th. So, you know, like, you're hoping that the Saints' rushing attack can get some things going and the offensive line can kind of establish some dominance at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
That Alvin can get going. And that Kendry, when Alvin needs to be spelled, Kendry can hop in and have a really nice day. This is a Giants defensive line that already wasn't good against stopping the run, but they lost their best run stuffer in Dexter Lawrence, their nose tackle.
Huge.
A superstar player. A guy that's great against the run and great against the pass. And now he's out for the season. He got placed on IR with an elbow injury that he suffered against the Cowboys. So, I mean, that's a huge piece that they're missing on the interior defensive line. So the Saints kind of lucked out there, but you got to take advantage. If you're not going against that stud, like, you got to get some run game going. You got to get this run game established against, once again, a poor defensive line.
You know, I mentioned, obviously, Nick Saldivari was out for this game, but I didn't mention the Saints put out a roster alert yesterday that he has been placed on injured reserve. The guard, unfortunately, dealing with a knee issue. We'll see if he's able to return at the end of the year, but highly unlikely for him. They said it was a pretty significant knee injury that he was dealing with. The team also signed wide receiver Kevin Austin Jr. and Dante Pettis to the active roster, and they have waived guard Kyle Hergel. Also an injury update. The team downgraded defensive Antonio Passanio for out for this game, so he wasn't even questionable, so my fault there.
Yeah, no, he's still coming off the Achilles injury. He may be returning later on. Potentially as early as next week. The window opened for him, but they're still, as you mentioned earlier, Steve, being very careful with him.
I was curious to see if maybe Tano could get on the field coming down the stretch here, just because the D-line has been really lacking in a pass rush and stopping the run, and I'm thinking any kind of
reinforcement,
you know, exactly, would help at this point. But it's questionable to see where he would fit in the rotation right now. You know, I'm still waiting to see a guy like, you know, Isaiah Foskey get in the mix more, but that just hasn't happened either.
Yeah, he would carve out a role for sure, a veteran guy, but at the same time, coming off a major, like an Achilles injury, it's not, you know, it's not a minor thing. So, yeah, give him some time, but he'll be back in. Once he is back, he definitely has a role on this defensive line because, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, you're just kind of looking for a new face to kind of help things out because the defensive line has been one of the most disappointing parts of this team. The pass rush hasn't been good, and they haven't been good stopping the run.
And crazy, one of the most healthy.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why it's been so disappointing. So, but this is also not a good Giants offensive line.
Right.
Are you sensing a theme here? The Giants aren't good on the defensive line. They're definitely not good in the secondary. I remember we talked to Ryan Novinsky from NJ.com about this.
Yeah.
He said their secondary has just been awful. And they're without Deontay Banks, who's probably their top corner, even though he's kind of underperformed this year. He's been their corner one, though. But he's not going to be playing in this game either with an injury. So an already bad secondary is without probably their best guy. Now, they have a couple pieces on defense, young pieces that are going to develop into good players, like Tyler Newbin, the safety out of Minnesota, is something that Mike and I talked a lot about in the 2024 draft, pre-draft process, as some guy that we really, really liked. They scooped him up, so he's going to be good for them. But Deontay Banks out for this game as well. So that already kind of porous Giants secondary it's not going to be looking very good for this matchup.
You look at their, you know, the plus minus, the giveaway takeaway ratio is abysmal for them, and that's how you've, you know, you look at things. I think it's minus eight, minus nine.
Yeah, it's minus eight, which is 29th in the NFL.
Secondary, no interceptions this season, just the linebacker has the one pick that the Giants have far this year.
No, exactly. That's what I'm like. Their secondary is not very good, and they were hoping that Deontay Banks would be their number one corner. He's had kind of a down year. he was a former first-round pick. He's played pretty well in his career. But, I mean, they're without him as well. So who's going to be their cornerbacks in this game? Granted, the receivers that they're going against, you know, like Marquez Valdez-Scantling's really stepped up to be that wide receiver one for the Saints. But, I mean, outside of that, the receiving room leaves a lot to be desired without guys like Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave available.
Man, you mentioned MVS. Can he get a fourth straight game with a touchdown reception since coming to the Saints?
Yeah, keep on bringing those explosive plays, right? I mean, that's all he's done.
Definitely think Carr can test this secondary deep for sure.
Yeah, just throw it deep. I mean, Newbin's the one that you have to worry about at the safety position. But as far as the corners go, if MVS just does someone, yeah, give it to him deep.
I'm thinking, though, you mentioned obviously Alvin Kamara. I think he should have a pretty big game today. But if the Saints kind of have that foot on the gas for the most part, get a nice lead, a double-digit lead, I would hope you'd want to mix in a lot of Kendra Miller just to get him acclimated. I'm sure they're not going to give a ton of a workload to him, but he's got to be somebody, like you said, chomping at the bit. I've heard him talk about let the dog off the leash because everyone was joking about Darren Rizzi's got no doghouse. So
yeah.
I don't want to hear the excuses either of with whatever happened between him and Dennis Allen for him to go on injured reserve. Great, you're back now. Let's see it on the field, please.
Once again, the Saints are 5-point favorites on the road in this game.
Woof.
The Giants are not a good team. And they don't have a good run defense. So Alvin Kamara, yes, I agree that he's going to get the bulk of the load. I would like to see Kendra get a really solid, like, just workload today. Just how many carries will he get? I'm not exactly sure. But if Rizzi knows, I mean, they know how well he looked at practice throughout the week because obviously he's good to go for this game. I think he's going to receive some kind of workload here. And I really hope it's a solid one because the Giants' rushing defense is near the bottom of the league. What better game to get him back acclimated to things than this run defense?
And you know that, obviously, Taysom Hill on injured reserve. We don't have him in the mix. You have really used Jamal Williams limited this season, so I'm not expecting his workload to jump that significantly either. So Kendra Miller's that dude. Plus, he's your young prospect that you want to see more from. We've seen everyone's talking about you've seen the flashes on the field. He has been good when he's been in action. How can you just stay on the dang field?
You give those carries to Kendra 10 times out of 10 over Jamal Williams. I'm sorry. Like, that's the guy that you used a third-round pick on. That's the guy that you're still waiting. You've seen flashes from when he's been healthy. And that's the guy that you want to see more from. You
want
to see if he can.
Two games this year, sorry, he's averaging, what, 5.8 yards a carry?
Yeah, you want to see if he can do it consistently. You want to see if he can stay healthy throughout a consistent NFL workload. Yeah, you give those carries to him over Jamal Williams.
What you doing this morning, Who Dat Nation? 504-260-1870. Want to hear from you in the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. And woo, hoping for a better outcome today than we had on the football field for the rest of Louisiana this weekend. Tulane, Louisiana Lafayette, and Southern all losing in their conference championship games. It was a rough one. And pile on to that, the Pellies. A loss last night, and a Brandon Ingram injury. So we need some good news today.
Yeah, please beat the snot out of this Giants team. Like, yes, we need some good news. I agree with you, Steve.
Taking a break on First Take. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned on WWL. We're warming up here after a little bit of a cold spell. Got my coffee going and looking out, overseeing the Crescent City Connection here at the WWL studio. Getting ready for game day, a noon kickoff between the New York Giants, who play in New Jersey, against the New Orleans Saints. And I mentioned that just because it always bothered me as a kid. I grew up in Jersey.
Right.
And for whatever reason, both the Giants and Jets stadium is in New Jersey, yet they claim to be the New York team. It's like, we can't have one?
It's a really funny post I saw on Twitter the other day, Steve. It's just like, if Disney World is the happiest place on Earth, what's the saddest place on Earth?
MetLife Stadium.
And someone posted a picture of MetLife Stadium. Oh, man. New York football has just been down. You look at the Jets and the Giants. It's been rough.
Well, a big part of the Giants' issues are their head coach and general manager, Charlie. You talked to NFL insider Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL insider, on Tuesday about this. And let's get into it right away about you asking about this Giants team and their debacle all the way around from the front office to head coaching.
Brian Daboll and Joe Shane.
Yep.
I mean, they both make the hop over from Buffalo back in 2022. And I think Joe Shane's tenure has been pretty tumultuous, you would say. I mean, just ask Giants fans that get to watch Saquon Barkley every weekend in Philadelphia. And, you know, looking at Daniel Jones now on the street. Or he's in Minnesota now, my apologies. But you get my point here. It's been not the greatest tenure for Joe Shane early on. But looking at Brian Daboll, I want your thoughts on him because, you know, that first year he gets into the playoffs and they beat Minnesota in the wild card round before losing to Philly, a better team. But at the same time, it almost kind of felt like a curse because at that point, I think that's the reason they maybe paid Daniel Jones that type of contract. And obviously that's gone completely south quickly. And just kind of the buzz about their job security for both of them. Brian Daboll as head coach and then Joe Shane as GM of the Giants.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the whole way they handled Daniel Jones is a joke. And they handled the backup. I'd get benching him. You're going to bench him. That's fine. That doesn't bother me. But when you bench him and then the guy who played backup quarterback for you for 11 weeks in a row that would have gone in if Daniel Jones gets hurt, gets usurped in the pecking order by your third team quarterback who doesn't take reps during the week because your second teamer gets them, both as the second team quarterback and as the scout team quarterback, then all of a sudden he gets, you hand him the job because his name is Tommy Cutlets and he resonates with Giants fans. So you give him the job and you usurp the backup quarterback because your excuse is, well, he knows the offense better. Well, if he knew the offense better, he would have been your backup quarterback. Like that whole thing is such a debacle and it's an absolute clown show and it's embarrassing. And if I was a player in that organization and I was sitting in that locker room, I wouldn't trust anybody within the organization that runs it as far as I could throw them. And Dable's a friend of mine. And I just look at that and I don't know if that comes from Joe Shane. I don't know if it comes from Dable. I don't know if it comes from the owner, but it's a clown show. And, you know, and they come out and play after that, you know, and they're playing against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they just absolutely get throttled in that game.
They quit in that game,
30-7.
They quit in that game. I mean, you could see them specifically on defense, like they weren't trying to tackle or anything.
No, it was awful. From the word go, Todd Bowles, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, blitzed them 75% of the time in the first half. And like I always joke around, you know, I was with the guys on the set of Breakfast Ball and they were like, you know, Malik Nabers is mad because, you know, he said, hey, they didn't give me the ball until the fourth quarter and, you know, we need to start the ball, get the ball in my hands. And I always joke around, the further you get away from the football, the less you actually know about the game. I go, why do you think a wide receiver didn't get the ball early? Because you're peeling the quarterback up off the turf every freaking play. They brought pressure. They jammed. They played man-to-man, brought pressure on just about on every 75% of the plays. They sacked him four times in the first half. They had him under duress the whole game. There's a reason you didn't get the ball, moron, because the quarterback couldn't throw the ball. Like it blows me away that you don't understand how the game works. 10 of the guys have to do their job for you to sniff the football. And when they're bringing pressure and you guys can't block them, you're not going to get the ball. Like the fact that it was an epiphany that all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, Malik Nabers, you started getting the ball when they called off the dogs. Yeah, you did start getting the ball. Like, come on, you guys. This is, it's ridiculous.
NFL Odyssey insider Mark Schlereth is bringing the heat right there for sure. From the, like I said, the GM, head coach, and even Malik Nabers was not safe from Mark Schlereth's wrath.
So I think Novak texted me this in the middle of the week when he was like listening to that audio. He's just like, because Schlereth went on a rant about receivers a couple weeks back.
Divas, right.
Yeah, he's just like, I wish I hated anything as much as Schlereth hates diva wide receivers or something. And it's so true because, you know, for those that don't know, after that game against, like, I think it was Tampa Bay that he was talking about, obviously Todd Bowles was blitzing, like, as he said, 75% of the time in the first half. And Malik Nabers after the game was just like, I can't do much if I don't get the ball. And he started getting the ball in, like, the fourth quarter. And that's where Schlereth went on that rant about Nabers. It's just like, they couldn't get you the ball, dude. What are you talking about?
He didn't have time.
Exactly. So, but going back to my point, you know, when I was asking Mark about Dable and Shane, it's been a really interesting kind of story to follow from the outside looking in. I can only imagine really how it is in New York, because when Dable and Shane both came over from Buffalo, Dable had a lot of the credit for making Josh Allen what he is as the offensive coordinator with the Bills. And if you look, Josh Allen's, if not the best, one of the best quarterbacks in football right now, obviously.
Agreed, right.
But it all kind of really started with Dable's tutelage. And so they bring Dable in, and that first year that he's there in New York is the year that they go to the playoffs. They go like 7-9-7. They make it to the playoffs, and they beat the Vikings on the road in the first round. They lose to Philadelphia in the next round, a much better team in that situation. But as I kind of mentioned in my question to Mark, it kind of felt like a curse, right? Because at that point, exactly. I think they felt obligated to pay Daniel Jones.
For sure. What are you going to do?
And Daniel Jones got a ridiculous contract from him, and it was never going to work out for how much they paid him. And then they let Saquon Barkley walk. And if you look at Saquon Barkley, what he's doing with Philadelphia right now, Steve, you know firsthand,
yeah.
Like what it's been incredible. He's an MVP candidate this year as a running back, which we almost never see. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a...
That's a huge thing, too, obviously. Not only did you let Saquon go, but he went to a division rival, man.
Yeah, he went to a division rival. And then the situation with Daniel Jones this year, you paid him after that little playoff push that they went on. You pay him, and then you cut him this year. And now he's in Minnesota. And nobody picked him off of waivers, obviously, because his contract was that ridiculous. Nobody was going to pay that type of contract for Daniel Jones. Joe Shane's another interesting one, Steve, because his drafting has been kind of questionable. Like Malik Nabers, we just talked about, he's a stud. Even though he's kind of a diva, which it seems like all top wide receivers are, to be fair.
For the most part, yeah. The Saints are very lucky, I feel like. They don't really have that guy. I mean, Mike Thomas obviously used to be
Mike
that
Thomas
dude.
Mike Thomas definitely was that dude. But as far as his drafting recently, like Evan Neal has kind of been a disaster for them. Kayvon Thibodeau, who they took really early on, hasn't, like he's shown flashes, but he hasn't really panned out as like a top flight defensive end that they were
pretty
hoping
vocal dude too, though.
Yeah, I know. So they've had these top picks and some of them haven't worked out. Joe Shane's an interesting one though. Like I think if you're asking me what will happen, a couple of weeks ago I felt that Brian Daboll was still safe. I thought he bought himself time with that playoff push in the first year. But you just watch, you know, it was better against the Cowboys because it's a division rival and you can always get up for that type of game. But if you watch what happened when they played the Buccaneers, Steve, they rolled over.
No, you mentioned it. The defense was like, I'm not making a tackle.
They rolled over in that game. And you'll see some of the plays. They're just like out there doing cardio. It's just like they're not playing football. And that was the point where it's just like, this team looks like it's quit on Brian Daboll. And now I'm not so sure that he's going to be safe. And if this Giants team completely bottoms out, which it feels like they're already, when we talked with Patrick Peterson about this on Friday, he said that they've already hit rock bottom. But if they completely bottom out and finish like 2-15, Joe Shane.
Clean that slate.
Joe Shane should be gone, and I think Brian Daboll's also going to be gone.
Sure, you make those sweeping changes, you're going to have likely the top pick in the NFL draft, and, you know, see what you can do. Obviously, it's going to be curious, obviously, the draft time. Do you end up taking that QB? Is it going to be like a Shador going to the Giants?
Shador, I think, is going to go to Vegas. I think
that's what he's wanting.
Cam Ward would probably be the guy for the Giants. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shapes up, because you still have Jacksonville that you're going to be contending with for that top pick, and Vegas, who's going to be up in that number two, who the Saints play in a few weeks. So a few teams are going to be up there trying to contend for a top pick. It's not the best quarterback class, but those two guys right there, Cam Ward and Shredder, are probably the guys that are going to be top 10 picks at the quarterback position.
Speaking of QB classes, Quinn Ewers, woof.
Yeah. No, I mean, he came into the season.
Not a great showing yesterday.
Yeah, he came into the season with a lot of high expectations. And him and Carson Beck, I think both came in with really high expectations.
He got rocked.
Yeah, I know he did. But as far as like the seasons at a glance, I think there's probably only two first-round quarterbacks this year, as opposed to the six that we had in the top 12 last year. But this is going a little bit off on a tangent. I just think the Giants have a lot of holes to fill. Obviously, QB1 is the biggest one because it's the most important position.
Right.
So they'll probably draft a QB early on this upcoming year. But at that same time, I don't think it's going to be Joe Shane that's doing it. And I don't think it's going to be Brian Daboll that's coaching them. It just feels like the Giants at this point, if they end up going 2-15 this year, if they completely fall apart, it just feels like a time to clean house.
Be interesting to see if the Giants end up making a big power move. You've heard Bill Belichick interviewing with North Carolina. What if they decide, you know what, Bill, you can have total control, be GM/head coach, and, you know, make it work over here. Although we know Belichick's drafting has not worked well for the New England Patriots.
No, it hasn't either. So I think you would want to go younger, but who knows? I don't know what the Mara family wants.
Like you said, who knows? Because as Schlaera said, what a clown show the franchise has been.
They're a mess. They're a mess right now. And all the statistics prove it. If you look at their depth chart, that proves it as well. They haven't drafted well. They haven't played well. They haven't coached well. Nothing's really gone right for this Giants team. And so for Saints fans, you're heading to MetLife Stadium feeling pretty confident.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what the game time temperatures are going to be like. We'll check in with our Saints sideline reporter, Jeff Nowak, in the next hour to find out how things are over there. I know he was spending time yesterday. He told me walking around the mall across from the MetLife Stadium, and he's like, you wouldn't believe it. There's a ski slope in here. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's in the Dream Mall of America
or
something.
Ski slope in a mall?
Yeah, they have a ski slope in there that they have for folks to, you know.
How big is it?
It's massive.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
So it's like an entertainment complex as well they have.
Okay, I gotcha.
We're taking a break here on First Take. Want to hear from you as we get ready for a noon kickoff in New Jersey against the New York Giants. The Oakenhart Jewelers talking text line is 504-260-1870. We'll be dipping back more into our sound bank right here on WWL's First Take after the break. Be right back. Yes, indeed, it is game day. You're hanging out with Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Cullen Steele as we get ready for the Bud Light countdown. The kickoff coming up with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and then kickoff in New Jersey against the New York Giants, a noon start with Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister on the call. Also, Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak will be joining you then. Guys, something that we found out this week was that Cam Jordan has been nominated the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award from the Saints. Recognizes the player who excels on the field and demonstrates a steadfast commitment to creating a really positive impact beyond the game. That's all his work in the community. And if you don't know, folks, every single Tuesday, it's the Saints off day. And what is Cam doing? He's going to visit a school, talking to kids, and it might not just be one school in a day. He might take on two or three. Really amazing stuff this guy's done, and it's been since he's been in the league with the Black and Gold. Just someone that is so important to the team's locker room and obviously for the work he's doing for the New Orleans community. Here's what he had to say today, this week in the locker room, getting ready for the New York Giants, but really more about him and being nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award.
Been joking about it, but how many school visits do you think you've made over the years?
I don't know. I've been here for 14 years. Sometimes it happens off season, sometimes it doesn't, but I know for sure it happens on the off day of while I'm in season. So let's just call it 16 by 14, you know, with some 17s in there. Probably just over 200.
Is there a day where you just don't feel like doing it?
Isn't there a day that you don't feel like going to work, but you go to work? The answer is, yeah, on days that you're, like, broken and you're like, I'm barely getting out of bed. How do I start this day off? But at the same time, those kids bring energy back into your life. It's like having kids at the house, you know? And it's like they don't really care whether they care if you lost. But they don't care that, you know, what you're feeling like. You come in and bring in a positive message and a positive energy, you get something back out of it. So when I go in and we talk about leadership, when I go in we talk about, you know, bullying, or we talk about academic success, and you give them a physical representation of what success can lead to. It wasn't, you know, that I had all A's until I got to high school, or the first time I brought home my first C, and my parents took me out of football alone, and it meant that much more to me to get back onto the field, or just the success it was to be able to go to the number one public university in the nation, like the University of California at Berkeley. But it's the ideology that a positive impact can be created and you not know it. So 14 years ago when I was going to these schools, and it was like me and like Akeem Hicks, or me and, you know, Will Smith back in the day going to hospital visits or whatever it was, you don't realize what you've done until 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 14 years later. And you see, you know, those kids like, hey, man, you came and visited me when I was at my lowest point, or you came and talked to my classroom. And now that I try and give back in this way, that those positive impacts help create everlasting positive impacts.
What was your genesis? Was it Steve, your dad?
Man, Steve or Anita, you know, when you have two parents that give so much, whether it's my dad, you know, he used to go to those football camps, and you go with them. You're like, why isn't my dad paying attention to me? Because he's paying attention to all the other kids. Or you have all these friends in the world that come through your house, and your mom goes out of her way to feed them. She goes out of her way to drop food off to neighbors, to neighborhoods, to kids that she knows are struggling. When you have two parents that have giving hearts, you're just a byproduct, you know? I feel like I'm sort of competitive in everything I do. When I have teammates like Tyrann Mathews and Demario Davis, and you look out into the league, and you got guys like Calais Campbell. Back in the day, you had, Steve Smith giving out shoes towards kids out in Carolina. It's like, man, whatever I'm doing, I feel like I'm not doing enough. So you start off the partnering with Crescent City Corps. You create, you know, a coalition of athletes that you can mentor. And you go in through these schools, and you pick up different mentees And, you know, you feel like as they get to college, you can, like, all right, you're grown now, go on, and they never leave. You realize that these positive impacts just sort of happen over time, but they're creating hopefully a better sense of community.
All-around good guy Cam Jordan there speaking about being nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And, you know, obviously he's not the same player right now that he once was, 34 right. years old. But, man, what a contribution he's had just to the team overall, the energy, the excitement that he brings to the locker room, and the work he does in the community, unmatched. And what a home run of a draft pick that this first-rounder was for the Black and Gold.
Yeah, a future Ring of Honor for the Saints.
Absolutely.
Should be a future Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Cam Jordan. Yeah, fantastic stuff from Cam. I mean, Walter Payton, Man of the Year. The NFL always promotes it as, like, the most prestigious award, and it really is getting out, like, these players getting back to the community and stuff like that. And so Cam Jordan, 2024 nominee. Gail Benson sent out a press release saying, quote, Cam's dedication to this community has been evident since he became part of the Saints family 14 years ago. His true passion for helping people, especially our youth, shines through in everything he does. Whether on or off the field, Cam gives his full effort. He's a respected 10-year team captain, a devoted husband and father, and a compassionate servant to our community, making him the model Saint. I could not be more proud of Cam and all that he has accomplished. So, I mean, that kind of tells you right there. Cam Jordan's the man, dude.
I'll just remember, too, you know, doing NFL draft night, and he, you know, gets selected by the Saints, and the excitement of him, you know, coming to New Orleans. You typically, you know, don't really hear that too much, but he was just all about, I can't wait to get down there and get to work.
It's a little bit different in football. You don't see as many people kind of sulking about where they get picked. It's
not like basketball.
Not like basketball. That's exactly what I was about to say, Steve.
Taking a break here on First Take. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Colored Steel, bringing you till 10 a.m. That's when the Cajun Cannon takes over on the Bud Light Countdown to kickoff. We got a noon start today in New Jersey between the 2-10 New York Giants and the 4-8 Saints. Can they get that riz back this week after dropping a tough one to the Rams last weekend in the Week 13 matchup? We're in Week 14 already, folks, and NFL football getting closer and closer to the playoffs. We'll be back with more First Take right after this. Ooh-wee. We're back here on First Take, Saints game day, Week 14 action, gentlemen, getting ready for a noon start in MetLife Stadium against the 2-10 New York Giants. Saints looking to get back into the win column after falling last week at home to the LA Rams. Some of the other games in action today we're going to take a look at right now. Some of the early starts going on. Got the New York Jets taking on the Miami Dolphins. Interesting matchup there. Obviously, the AFC East has been pretty dismal, except for the Buffalo Bills. The Jets were expected to contend for that a title in there, but things have been so bad with Aaron Rodgers. And you saw that he's got a Netflix series. I don't know if it's out now or it's coming out, about his whole process and being at that getaway. I don't know if I really want to tune in or am interested to see what's up with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I'm all right.
I'm good. I can pass.
I wonder how Jets fans feel about that guy. It's been such a big disappointment. It goes back to what we were saying.
Right, do they want him back next year, the fans?
I would doubt it. But then again, like, what do you do? Do you take a quarterback in a bad QB class? Who knows? But it goes back to what I was saying, that post about the saddest place on earth is MetLife Stadium. I mean, New York football is really down, Steve. The Jets and the Giants. The Giants are 2-10, or the Jets 3-9. I mean, come on, man. 5-19 combined.
And they don't have Breece Hall today. He's out.
Yeah, it's bad. So, 5-19. Oh, man. Maybe think of the Pelicans for a second.
Looking at the other games in action in the afternoon, you got the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, we'll be keeping an eye on that throughout the Saints matchup. 6-6 at the 10-2 Minnesota Vikings. One of the few times that Saints fans will be rooting for Mini in this matchup. Curious to see how this one shakes out because, man, oh, man, Kirk Cousins last game was just throwing balls everywhere to the Chargers instead of to his own players.
And the Chargers defense is really solid, so you got to give them a little bit of credit, but, man, Kirk Cousins looks bad. And so,
they're calling for the rookie over there, Penix.
I don't think they go to him.
Nah, you've invested too much in Kirk.
Exactly. Kirk. Right. But, if things kind of go in doubt with them winning the NFC South, like if Kirk has another really bad day and they just get throttled by the Vikings, Kirk Cousins' homecoming, by the way, to Minnesota,
yes,
in a rematch against his old team, that line is actually moved in favor of the Vikings. I remember when we did this pick during Pick Six this past week, Steve, because we wanted to throw it in there, NFC South flavor as well. The Vikings were like 5.5-point favorites. Now they moved up to 6-point favorites against this Falcons squad, which doesn't sound like a big jump, but it is. Like the 6 and the 7, those right. are like a lot of money's coming in on the Vikings to just completely throttle the Falcons today. And Saints fans would obviously be very happy with that. But at the same time, one of the fans that when we picked the game is just like, this is the New Orleans hate bowl. I hate both of these teams.
3-9 Cleveland Browns are at the 9-3 Pittsburgh Steelers. 2-10 Jacksonville Jaguars at the 3-9 Tennessee Titans. Woof! I think that's the game that Schlereth is doing too, right?
Poor Mark.
How did he get hosed there?
He had some really bad games in some weeks, but no, Schlereth's the man. But he'll still make it entertaining. As far as the Jags go, I think Lawrence is done for the year. They might be in full-on tank mode for the top overall pick.
Another head coaching job that'll likely be up for grabs come the offseason. Who
and
knows what happens with Doug
GM
Peterson.
Another GM job.
Right.
I mean, Trent Baalke, how many times has he gotten the first overall pick in the draft? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, Trayvon Walker, potentially this year. How many opportunities are you going to get to bite at the apple, right? So, yeah, that's another team that's going to be contending with the Giants and the Raiders for that top overall pick.
Yeah, the last noon game we care about, and you just mentioned them, the Las Vegas Raiders at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Woof, the Bucs get an easier matchup coming into this game. Interested to see what Baker Mayfield does. I know he's dealing with, he got banged up last game, had to leave a little bit. I think it's a hip and a knee, something like that that Baker's dealing with. But he was a full go of practice all week, so clearly not that serious for him. Mike Evans trying to get back on track. He needs, I think, 90-some-odd yards a game, 96 yards a game, thank you, Cullen, to get to 1,000 yards for the season, and he's had 1,000 yards receiving in every single year he's been in the NFL.
I will be putting on my Brock Bowers jersey today. No, I don't have one of those, but I do
you
love
wish
Brock.
You did, right?
Yeah, no, I love Brock Bowers. He's fantastic. So hopefully he can help the Raiders pull off an upset against the Buccaneers. Brock Bowers this year, Steve, by the way, 84 receptions first in the NFL among everyone. 84 receptions. So
I remember doing those mock drafts early on. We're like, could the Saints take Brock?
He's so good. 884 yards, which is fourth in the NFL. He's also got 4 touchdowns, 10.5 yards per catch. So Brock Bowers, I don't think he's – I said this on Monday last week. I don't think he's getting enough consideration for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Like, it's just kind of been given to Jaden or Bo Nix, which, granted, both of them have had fantastic years. But Brock Bowers is doing this as a rookie tight end.
Well, you know, it's all about the QBs, baby.
No, I get it. But, I mean, I just want to give him his flowers because he's been awesome this year. And obviously, the Saints fans were rooting for him to tear up that Buccaneers defense today.
Real quickly going through the 3 o'clock games, Seahawks at Cardinals, Bills at Rams, Bears at 49ers, and then a fun one tonight when we get off the air, guys. We got the Chargers at the Kansas City Chiefs. Oh, what will the NFL scriptwriters have in store tonight?
I'm rooting for the Chargers. I want to see,
I think so. Everybody
I want to see
is.
The Bills get that one seed. I mean, they should have lost to the Raiders. That was such a fluky win, among many fluky wins for this Kansas City team.
First hour of First Takedown, coming back with more after the top hour of news. Stay right here on WWL. Back in for the second hour of First Take as we get ready for a noon start against the New York Giants today. The Saints looking to get back in the win column against a team that has definitely been struggling more than them this season and also piled up with injuries on that side of the football. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Cullen Steele bring you till 10 a.m. when the Bud Light countdown to kickoff will start with the Cajun Cannon. And then I mentioned the noon kickoff in MetLife Stadium, home of the New York Giants, where they have not won a single game this season. 0-6 at home right now. Hopefully we make it 0-7 today.
Yeah, a couple of stats here I'll throw at you, Steve. I'll hop Bobby in the line here because I know he's going to talk about this too. The Giants and Saints have met 32 times. New York holds a 17-15 advantage. Get this. The Saints are 5-12 on road contests played against the Giants at Yankee Stadium, Shea Stadium, Giants Stadium, and now MetLife Stadium. But the last time they met in MetLife, the Saints beat the Giants 33-18. You'll remember on September 30th, 2018, Alvin Kamara in that game, 134 yards, 3 touchdowns. So I think that was the game where like he ran into the tunnel after like a late touchdown. You remember that, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Like I was on the sidelines.
Exactly.
And what I laugh about that was my return back home to New Jersey where I grew up and has been the only place, you know, Philadelphia Eagle fans get obviously the bad rap of being a nasty fan base, but taking the bus in with the team to the stadium
Giants
for the game.
Giants fans were nasty?
Giants fans, just you saw middle fingers from from women, children.
Oh, my.
So I was like, good to be back home.
The Northeast.
The welcome back home salute coming into the stadium. But, yeah, it should be a fun one. This New York Giants team has struggled all season. You know that the fan base is just as frustrated, and the Saints just hopefully can unleash some of their frustrations on this team because they've just been pathetic up front in the offensive and defensive lines as well.
Really, really bad in the trenches. And so hopefully the Saints can make that 17-16, get a game closer. They've split the last two. Both were played at the Superdome. But no Saquon Barkley to deal with this time around, thankfully. So we'll get more into the Saints and the Giants, specifically their playmakers on New York side of things. Saquon is such a stud, Steve, and we know that he's an MVP candidate, but they obviously miss him dearly. Tyrone Tracy's been a solid replacement,
yeah,
but he's not Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, you mentioned playmakers, obviously one of the Saints' big ones, not playing in this game, in Taysom Hill. He went to injured reserve, and Clint Kubiak was asked this week about the challenge of trying to replace a Taysom Hill in this offense.
Well, you know, the number one thing is just the leadership, the you know, a guy that just kind of said, Eric McCoy is the heart and soul of the offensive line. I think Taysom is the heart and soul of the offense, just based on his production and the way he carries himself, and so we're gonna miss a lot from him. Probably one of the best football players I've ever been around, hands down. Football player that you have a hard time replacing. We're not going to try to replace him. We're just going to have the next guy step up, and I'm looking forward to those opportunities those guys get. But you don't replace the Taysom Hill, so we'll miss him.
Heart and soul of the offense. Clint Kubiak called him also probably the best offensive player he's been around. Pretty huge compliments right
and
there.
And he's out for the year. It's really unfortunate. Just a terrible injury that he suffered against the Rams. He's been placed on IR. His season is done, and we'll see what the future holds for Taysom Hill. But now if you're looking at the Saints' attack against, you know, this Giants' defense, we talked about, like, the playmakers on this team, Steve, and we had talked about this for weeks now. It's just, like, who's going to be making the plays for this offense? I mean, it's got to be – you already have Kamara, and then you're bringing back Kendra Miller in this game, and so hopefully he can make an impact. Marquez Valdes-Scantling in the receiving game, and hopefully the tight ends can get involved too for the Saints once again with Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau. That's who you're expecting to make plays against this porous Giants defense.
Definitely need, you know, big game Juwan would be nice, and I think he could take advantage of this Giants defense today. The tight end position hasn't been impressive at all for the Saints this year, and obviously with a guy like Taysom out the mix, that gets magnified even more, missing out on the talent there. And I feel like Juwan Johnson's been another guy we've seen some flashes from, but he just really hasn't lived up to that contract since getting re-upped by the Saints.
Mike and I will talk more about this once it gets closer to draft season, but this feels like a pretty good tight end class, and it was a good tight end class a couple years ago.
Oh, I know you were going to go there.
You should take a tight end. Like, there's a lot of holes on this team, but I think that they should definitely bolster that position and finally spend some draft capital on it.
No, you were so mad, you know, what was it, 2 years ago with the draft? Or was it 3 years ago now with Laporta
It was 2 years ago with Laporta and Kincaid and Tucker Kraft, who's been really good in Green Bay. There's a lot of really good players in that class. So,
right, Mike was calling it the best tight end class he had ever seen.
And he was right. This year's class is also pretty good. It's not as good as that class, but still there's the potential for you to pick up a tight end at some point. I think they should definitely do it to kind of bolster that position.
Talking about playmakers on the New York Giants side of the ball, one bright spot for them has definitely been at the running back position in Tyrone Tracy Jr. We spoke with WFAN's Paul Dottino, and he said a little bit about this, about the rookie running back coming into this game.
Terrific player when he first came into college. Of course, then he transferred over there. He was a wide receiver, and he was converted into a running back. Terrific vision, patience, shows running back instincts, has terrific hands catching the ball out of the backfield. Love his quickness, love his jukeability. Now, where does Tyrone Tracy still have to clean things up? He's got to do some more stuff in pass pro, which he's worked very hard at, and he's actually become kind of adequate. And the other thing is, he's put the ball on the ground a few times, and that's a bit disappointing. But again, like one of the fumbles he had a couple weeks back, he was switching the ball from hand to hand because he thought to himself, and this is a good thing, right? He thought to himself, oh, the contact is coming from this side, I better switch the ball to the other hand. That's what all good running backs will tell you to do. So he was thinking along the right process, but then in the conversion to the other hand, the ball got punched free. So, you know, that's the kind of thing you're going to live with as he goes through growing pains. Maybe as he develops more and gets more time at the position, because he's now the primary back ahead of Devin Singletary, maybe he'll make that switch earlier in the run, you know, before the contact comes, and then he'll be able to grip it harder, and then the fumble won't happen. So, or maybe he won't even have to think about it. He'll do it instinctively, and then he'll be able to concentrate more on holding the ball instead of actually thinking about how I have to switch it. He's a terrific young talent and a great kid, by the way. He's 24. He's a year older. He's one of those guys who took advantage of the extra time in college after COVID.
Talking about Tyrone Tracy there, a guy that's got 619 rushing yards on the year, averaging 5 yards a carry, has 4 rushing touchdowns, also 30 targets receiving with 24 receptions and 178 yards there, averaging 7.4 a catch. You mentioned jukeability. We learned a new word today. And talking about the fumbles, obviously the situations probably magnified them, but has 3 total on the year, so not like a huge problem for him.
Yeah, it's not like he's got like half a dozen, but you're right, Steve. The fumbles have come at very inopportune
times. There you go, right. That's the word I was looking for.
Right.
Thank you,
so,
Charlie.
No problem. So Tyrone Tracy, 5th-round pick from this past year's draft, pick 166, and this was a hit for Joe Shane. I was kind of, I don't want to say I was trashing him, but I was just kind of stating the facts about what's happened in his tenure there.
Right, you'll give him his flowers when they're due.
I'll give him his flowers with Tyrone Tracy, and he's been a really good pick out of Purdue. Now, as you know, your WFAN guest said, he's an older rookie. He's now 25 years old, turned 25 back in November. So, but he's really hit the ground running in his career. If you're asking me who are the players that really scare you on this Giants roster, not even just the offense, Tyrone Tracy does worry me. Because that 5 yards per carry in a pretty large sample size,
right,
the Saints run defense has not been very good. And that's where, you know, the Giants offense can definitely hurt them. Is Tyrone Tracy, if he gets off, has a really strong performance, you know, they can start moving the football with Tyrone Tracy running the ball.
Also worried about, you mentioned the run game there too, with a guy like Drew Locke can definitely take off and do some damage.
He can. I'm not certain like how much I worry about it. Granted, the Saints defense at times have been burned by running quarterbacks, but Drew Locke's like, he's got mobility, but he's not a Lamar Jackson or anything.
No, definitely not.
Right. So like,
but he's got that, like,
it's part
said,
of his game,
the mobility
though.
And escapability.
Yeah.
And we've seen that be a problem for this Saints defense.
No, it's like Deuce would always say, they got to be disciplined defensively against someone like Drew Locke. They can't let him be the one to beat them in the rushing attack. Granted, having to stop Tyrone Tracy will be a huge deal. If he can make Drew Locke be a, you know, a pocket passer and make him beat you with his arm, I think that's exactly what the Saints want to do. Instead of having some success on the ground with someone like Tracy, who really has been solid in his rookie campaign.
We've talked endlessly this season about the issues with the Saints offensive line, the problems they've dealt with injuries. Well, WFAN's Paul Dottino talked about the Giants O-line, and they're having just as many problems. Here he is.
For most of the season, the rebuilt offensive line that had 3 new starters on it was functional. And I define functional as an offensive line that will allow the coach to call any play in his playbook at any time with a reasonable chance of success. That's how I define a functional offensive line. To me, that's the minimum goal for any NFL team. If you don't have that, and your coach has to start throwing out pages or chapters of his playbook, given where he is on the field, that's a huge problem. The Giants have had a dysfunctional offensive line for most of the past decade. This year, first half of the season, the offensive line was functional. It was everything else that was going wrong. Well, now the offensive line is badly beaten up. So without Andrew Thomas at left tackle, the starter, without Jermaine Illuminor, the starting right tackle, who had to go to the left side, and then Evan Neal, who finally healed from his injuries and got off the bench, became the starting right tackle. Well, now Neal is also hurt. So their top 3 tackles are hurt, which means you're going to get the grizzled veteran, Chris Hubbard, who is basically better at guard than he is at tackle. He's going to play one of the tackles. And Joshua Azudu, a 3rd-year pro whose career has been beset by injuries and has played both guard and tackle in the league, he will be the other starting tackle this week. So, you know, that's not a great situation for any quarterback, no matter who you are, a backup or a starter in this league. That's going to be a pretty tough deal when you're down to, really, your 4th and 5th offensive tackles starting in the game. The guards, Greg Van Roten, longtime vet, is the right guard. John Runyon, longtime vet as well, is the left guard. Those guys have been functional basically for most of the season. Last couple weeks haven't played as well. And John Michael Schmitz is the second-year center who in the last month, again, inconsistent. Looked like he was coming along really well, and then he's had some scuffling games over the course of the last month. I think the Giants' offensive line, for the most part this year, has been functional and probably right at the bottom of the second third of the league.
WFAN's Paul Dottino there talking about the G-men's O-line and looking at their injury report for this game. Evan Neal is questionable. You also have Chris Hubbard questionable. And then Luminor is doubtful for this game. So just as the black and gold has dealt with issues along the O-line, the Giants are right up there with them.
Mike made this point earlier in the week when previewing the Giants. He said that Andrew Thomas, obviously their stud left tackle, as soon as he got injured, everything kind of crumbled around them. Like that Giants offensive line, as Paul had mentioned, was serviceable at the start of the year because of Andrew Thomas, who's one of the premier left tackles in the league. But then he gets hurt, and everything just kind of fell apart. So, Saints D-line, get after it.
Let's see this pass rush, please.
Just, yeah, get something done. If you're facing, like, as Paul was mentioning, the fourth and fifth string tackles on this team, because Illuminor won't be able to go. He was their right tackle, as Paul mentioned, moved to left. And then Evan Neal, who's been a bust out of Alabama, he hasn't worked out. If he's even unable to go in this game to play right tackle, I mean, you're playing backups to backups. So, yes, Saints defensive line, this is a huge game for them to get off and get after Drew Lock in this Giants attack.
Yeah, we've seen guys like Carl Granderson having a decent year, but man, oh man, when it look at someone like Chase Young, we expected so much more for him.
Yeah.
And obviously the talk was, oh, he's getting into a contract year. He's really going to, you know, boost those numbers, trying to get paid. As of right now, if the Saints were interested in bringing him back, they could probably get him pretty cheap.
Exactly. So it's a big game for those guys. Get after it. This Giants offensive
Peyton
line.
Turner.
Yeah, I mean, this Giants offensive line, you just got to attack it. And so I think that was a point that Rizzi had made during the coach's show, was that they want to win the line of scrimmage in this game. And this is the Giants team that you have to do it against. If your offensive line plays well against their defensive line, your defensive line plays well against their offensive line. Their O-line is beat up. Their D-line is also beat up because no Dexter Lawrence in this game as well. You just got to win in the trenches and bully them. And that's how you can, you know, go to MetLife Stadium and pick up a nice win.
Hopefully the Saints O-line can bully this D-line of the G-men. We know that Eric McCoy's back at center. Hallelujah. And we were kind of concerned at the start of the week when we found out Cesar Ruiz was dealing with a concussion.
Yeah.
He's cleared through the protocol, though, and is ready to go today. So they will have their starting five on the field against the Giants today, which you got. That's all you can ask for at this point.
You're starting five against a beat-up Giants defensive
right.
line, too. You don't have to double anyone now that Dexter Lawrence is out. You would have had to double Dexter Lawrence in that situation, and then that leaves some players on islands. But now you can go one-on-one across the board, and Mark Schlar was talking about this. That opens up a lot for this offense. So we'll see if they can take advantage. You know, if this offensive line plays well against a Giants defensive line that's struggled at times this year, especially now without their best player in Dexter Lawrence, yeah, go ahead and take advantage of that poor Giants secondary as well and put up some points on this board.
First Take is brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. We're going to take a break right now. When we get back, we'll check in on New Jersey with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, get the latest from there as we get ready for this noon kickoff coming up on WWL Saints Radio. Also, the Bud Light countdown to kickoff with the Cajun Cannon just a few minutes away, starting 10 a.m. right here on WWL. We'll be right back after the break. The New Orleans Saints have partnered with Seaside Events to provide the Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints Legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fans Cruise. Make sure you check that out online. We're going to do a little mingling with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak right now. Jeff, good morning from MetLife Stadium. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Looking out on the field now. It's a nice day. It's cloudy, but it's warming up. I was worried yesterday. It got down like into the like low 30s, but it's going to be in the high 40s probably for the game. So I think I'll survive. I will make it back. I'll make it back from this, I promise.
Yeah, not too bad. A little cold weather training for your upcoming bout in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Nothing will be compared to that, though. Just curious, when you look at the goalposts over there, what are the winds like in MetLife today?
Not much wind at all, really. You know, it was pretty windy yesterday, but it seems to have come down a little bit. We'll see how it goes throughout the game. MetLife is kind of weird. You get that kind of swirling wind. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that has been kind of flying under the radar this year, Blake Groupie's had a really solid season. He's 20 for 22. He's 5 for 5 from 50-plus, which I looked up yesterday. No kicker in Saints history has ever made 5 50-yard kicks in a season before Blake this year. I think the next closest was Will Lutz with 4. So he's going to have his work cut out for him to keep that going this week and then a couple weeks from now in Green Bay. But I don't think weather in general is going to be too much of a factor. It's mostly just going to be, okay, how do these guys warm up? You know, how do you kind of adjust your process to get a little bit more kind of blood pumping than maybe you would have to normally with the warmer temperatures? So I think that's going to be the only change, is how these guys kind of get activated today.
Yeah, please, no hamstring issues today. And speaking of that, we got obviously Kendra Miller coming back off of action. What are you expecting from the running back in this game? I don't think they're going to dial up a full workload for him, or do you think they really do, you know, release the dog, as he's been talking about this week?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any limitations on him per se. You know, he's fully healthy. I don't think it's necessarily a ramp-up thing, but yeah, I mean, he's still going to be the backup running back. Jamal Williams is healthy, so I'm sure he'll be in that rotation as well. We don't have the active inactive yet. I would expect Jordan Mims to be inactive, but we'll have to wait and see. But no, when Kendra has been available, he's been able to make an impact. So that's what I want to see. I want to see him get out there, get a few touches, see what he can do with those touches, and most importantly, get through the game, right? Like, we've seen him be productive. We've seen him get work in. I talked to him this week. He's excited to get out there. You know, he said he's been healthy for the last several weeks. You know, the original plan, as far as he knew, was not to go on IR. It was to miss that Panthers game and then come back for the Falcons game. You know, the coaching staff obviously felt differently. We asked Darren Rizzi about it. He said, hey, I wasn't the head coach at that point. It wasn't my decision. But there was some discrepancy as to, you know, how much time maybe he thought he was going to miss versus how much time the team expected him to miss. Either way, he was out the last four games. But, you know, I don't think this is a situation where you're like, oh, is he ready to play? He's ready to play. The question is exactly how much of a workload are you going to give him? And I do think this is a day where you're going to want to run the ball. You're going to want to pound the ball. The Giants' defensive line is a little bit in shambles, right? Dexter Lawrence is their best player. He's not out here. You know, they're going to be without several key players on defense in general. Bobby Okereke is really important in their run defense. He's not out there. Linebacker. So, no, I think however it shapes up, you're going to lean heavily on the ground game today, and hopefully that does involve a lot of Kendra Miller.
I remember, Jeff, when we were talking with interim head coach Darren Rizzi on the coach's show, he had mentioned that if you were the Giants, and he knows Brian Daboll, apparently they're friends, and I think they've worked together in the past, and he said that Daboll, everywhere he's gone, they want to run the football. And Tyrone Tracy has kind of usurped that running back one position from Devin Singletary, who entered the year. And the rookie has been really solid this year, averaging 5 yards per carry this season. And that's kind of the one spot that you're a little bit concerned about with this Giants attack, is, you know, the run defense for the Saints has been poor this year. So going against a guy that's averaging 5 yards per carry, Tyrone Tracy's been really solid this year, that feels like a spot where they can get hurt.
Yeah, you know, Tyrone Tracy, I think, is one of the bright spots for this team. You know, he's a rookie out of Purdue. He's a former wide receiver that converted to running back. So, you know, he's really kind of just scratching the surface on what he can do as a running back. So I think if the Giants are excited about one or two things, he's one of them. We'll have to wait and see whether Malik Nabers plays. You know, he missed the Friday practice. He went on the injury report late in the week. So if he's not out there, you're really limited in terms of the Giants and just what you could do on offense. So, yeah, I think they will lean on the run game as much as possible. Darren Rizzi and Brian Daboll, they were both on the Dolphins. I want to say it was 2011. Brian Daboll was the offensive coordinator, and Darren Rizzi was the special teams coordinator. So they do know each other well. Daboll up in Buffalo, obviously, was the run game is really important when you play in Buffalo late in the year. Like, you got to be able to run the ball, or you're not going to have much success. So it's definitely a big thing for him. But, no, the Saints, I think, are in a situation where, you know, kind of like the Rams last week. Everyone watched the Rams on Sunday Night Football get kind of blown off the field by the Eagles in the run game. And it's like, okay, when you watch that happen to a team, you know, every opponent coming up can be like, okay, how can we take advantage of this? What run looks work in that game and what can we get to? And, you know, as you saw against the Rams, you know, the run game didn't dominate that game. So sometimes you'll see a team kind of use something as a wake-up call and get a little bit better. But, you know, Colin Saunders talked about this week. It's like, when you're a wounded animal, people are going to identify that and try to attack the same things. And so it's going to be on the Saints to be better, because I think that's really the only way this game goes the Giants' way, is if they're able to establish the ground game, they're able to control the clock, get some points on the board early, and stay in this game. This is a really undermanned Giants team. And, you know, we saw a couple weeks ago they played the Bucks, and they were out of that game by midway through the first quarter. It was clear early on that wasn't going to be a close game. And I think the Saints would like to do that today as well. I think they want to be aggressive on defense. I think they want to pressure Drew Lock and, you know, get a lead in this game, because I think the Giants will fold if you get out to a lead. I don't think this is going to be a Giants team that makes a double-digit comeback. But if you let them hang around, you let an undermanned team hang around, you build some confidence throughout the game, you know, it could go either way. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Jeff, negatives for the Saints, obviously Taysom Hill on injured reserve. They just recently added Nick Saldiveri as well to IR. But a positive being that the offensive line for this black and gold bunch is intact. We know Eric McCoy will be back today. And after early worries about, you know, having Cesar Ruiz going through the concussion protocol, he's on track to be able to start this Sunday too. So a huge positive for them having that starting five available to go against this, you know, lacking Giants team.
Yeah, it'll be the first time since week three they had all five of their week one starters out there, which is kind of crazy to think about. And it makes a difference, right? You know, Eric McCoy is one of the better centers in the NFL, and when you add him to that lineup, you're a better football team. Same thing is true. You know, Lucas Patrick was playing really well before the injury. You've asked him to do a few different things. You've asked him to move positions a couple times this season. But, you know, he won that left guard spot for a reason. You know, Cesar Ruiz, he didn't leave last week's game with a concussion, which is kind of strange, but he kind of showed symptoms after the game, wasn't feeling well, so he went into the protocol. Darren Rizzi was pretty clear early in the week that they felt confident that he was going to be able to clear. He ultimately cleared that process on Friday. The final step is to get cleared by the independent neurologist. That happened, so he's going to be out there. And, yeah, so, you know, when this team has had its offensive line intact, it's been able to run the ball, it's been able to control games, control the clock. So that'll help. And, you know, you have to go back and wonder, okay, what would this season have looked like if you hadn't had all of these offensive line injuries, if you hadn't been a revolving door at the guard spots, at the center spot? We'll never know. But now this team's much better when it has that group up front. And, you know, I think the young tackles are going to play better because they're going to have help on the inside and they're not going to be as isolated. So, we'll see, but you know, that's a big deal for the Saints. They also signed Kevin Austin and Dante Pettis to the active roster, which is something I expected to happen. Kevin Austin has been a really solid player for them. They, you know, brought him in right before training camp. Yeah, he's been there the whole time. He's been working behind the scenes. People have taken notice. Darren Rizzi, after he took over, said that veteran players had come up to him and suggested that he should get a shot. And over the last 6 weeks or 3 weeks, rather, you know, he's got six catches. All six have been for first downs. He's been a really productive player. He's physical. He's the size you would want at wide receiver. So I'm excited what we might be able to see from him the rest of the way as well.
Yeah, that's kind of leading into my question here, Jeff. I remember we were talking with Ryan Novosinski, who works for NJ.com, a Giants beat writer, and he really kind of slammed the Giants secondary, saying that, like, they just haven't been productive at all this year. Deontay Banks, who's probably their top corner, he hasn't played very well this year, but he was, you know, the guy with the most potential in that secondary, is out for this game. So you're looking at the Saints passing attack. MVS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling's really kind of stepped up to be the wide receiver one, the explosive play machine, with the injuries that they've had in that wide receiver room. But who are you kind of anticipating? Is it going to be Kevin Austin? Is it going to be the tight ends that they'll use in this passing attack to really take advantage of a poor Giants secondary?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I think it's going to be kind of equal opportunity. I don't know if there's going to be anyone that you pepper with targets and say, oh, that's the wide receiver one, that's the focal point. But I do want to see Juwan Johnson get more involved. I think that's, if you're going to ask, okay, with Taysom Hill out, and Taysom Hill has suddenly been a important piece in the passing game after not really being that involved in the passing game early in the year, I'd say it has to be Juwan. Like, I want to see him kind of put forth over the last five games performances that make you feel like, okay, this is the tight end. Because you got to remember, he's on a contract year. He's in the second year of a two-year deal. So he's got to prove something. You know, he's got to show this team that they have a tight end that they can look at, because otherwise you're going to go into the draft, you're going to go into free agency and say, okay, what's our best option? So I think this is an important 5 weeks for Juwan. But no, I also think, you know, MVS is going to continue to be that deep threat. Derek has been, you know, pretty aggressive at giving him opportunities downfield. I think he's got, what, eight catches for and four touchdowns. you know, it's a pretty good efficiency rate when it comes to scoring touchdowns. So you're still going to see him get some chances, but I do want to see Kevin Austin get a little bit more, get more targets over the middle of the field. I think he has some upside there. You saw the Saints get a little bit more creative. They got him the ball on an end around last week. I think he took it for 9 yards. He's got good athleticism, good hands. And I think that's what this last 5 games needs to be about. Obviously, you're still competing. You're still mathematically in the chase. You want to win your final 5 games, go 9-8, whatever. It also has to be, okay, what do we have in some of these young players? And you look at on offense, you have Kendre Miller, you have Kevin Austin, you have some other guys. On defense, you have Alante Taylor, Kool-Aid McKinstry, you know, Brian Brzee on the inside, some of these guys. At some point, you'd like to see Isaiah Foskey get a few reps on the defense and see if he's maybe taking a couple steps forward. And, you know, so I think that's going to be, you know, obviously a subplot to the games themselves. But I do think if I'm the Saints, I'm looking at some of these players and saying, how can I get them a few more reps and kind of see what I have, evaluate what I have? Because that's going to be the bigger question as you get into the offseason of exactly where is this roster. And, you know, a game like this is a good kind of litmus test because the Giants are not a good team. They're 2-10. They're missing a lot of key pieces. If you can't go out and beat this team and do it kind of convincingly, and I think that tells you a lot about where you are as a franchise. So we're going to get a lot of answers to some questions over these next few weeks.
Yeah, I agree 100%. There's a reason that they're 5-point favorites on the road for this matchup. And, you know,
right.
Like, if you're looking at the – we talked about Dexter Lawrence on the defensive front for the Giants, but on the offensive line as well, I know you all talked with WFAN's Paul Dottino earlier in the week, but just the offensive line for this Giants team, it feels like an opportunity for the Saints' defensive front, which has been disappointing at times this year, to really step up and have a really nice game. Andrew Thomas was their star left tackle. He gets injured, and ever since then, it's all kind of crumbled around him. Like, I think what was it that Paul said, Steve? It's just that they're down to like their fourth and fifth tackles in this game.
Right.
And the interior hasn't even really been that good either. So it just feels like a good opportunity for guys like Carl Granderson, Chase Young, you know, Brian Brzee, Cam Jordan, the guys to really get off and have a really nice game.
Yeah, I don't remember the stats. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think the Saints got like 5 or 6 sacks last year against the Giants. Like they ruined Tommy DeVito. Tommy DeVito was the talk of the town until he showed up in New Orleans and they kind of turned it around
right.
on him. And, you know, he really hasn't been heard of since. He had that one start against the Bucs and he got beaten up in that game too. So I agree with you. And that's the weird thing about the Giants is you say like, oh, why haven't they invested in the offensive line? They absolutely have.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they spent top 5 picks on Andrew Thomas, on Evan Neal. Neither of those guys are going to play, right? Like they signed Jermaine Illuminor, a guy who's never missed games in his career, basically. It doesn't look like he's going to play. I want to say he's doubtful.
Correct.
Chris Hubbard, their backup, he got listed on the injury report late in the week. So he's a guy that, if he's playing, he's dealing with something. John Michael Schmitz is in there. Like, he's decent, but he's a young player. He's a center they drafted last year. So, no, I mean, there's no one – you know, this is already a team that's kind of undermanned, right? And then you lose even more pieces throughout the course of a season. You're 2-10. There can't be a ton of confidence on that side of the ball. And even a team that wants to run the ball, it's tough to run the ball when you know, 3/4 of your offensive line is down or 4/5 of your offensive line is down. And the Saints know that well. They were dealing with that earlier in the season. So, again, this is a Giants team that is already not in a good way from a confidence perspective, from a record perspective. And then they're losing even more pieces. And you got to remember, this is a team with 10 days rest. Like, they played on Thanksgiving. So they got some extra time, and they still can't get these guys healthy. So the Giants, it's suffice it to say, the Giants are in a bad way, and they've been that way for a long time. Like, that's the difference, I think, between the Giants and the Saints, is the Giants are 2-10, and it's still like, yeah, this is what we're used to. This is what happens every year, right? Like, the Giants, outside of that one year, they went to the playoffs. They've picked in the top 10, I want to say, like, 5 of the last 6 years, something like that. And the only thing they haven't done is be bad enough to get one of the top quarterbacks. Again, it's going to be interesting. I think this is a kind of a dangerous game for the Saints in that way of, like, if you go out and you win it, no one's going to give you a ton of credit because of the state the Giants are in. But if you go out and you lose it, then it's going to be a pretty strong indictment on your process. So that's going to be something the Saints have to stare in the face today.
Glad to hear that things aren't too chilly over there, Jeff. Looking forward to hearing you on the sideline along with the call from Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister, coming up noon here on WWL Saints Radio. Have a good one, and thanks for joining us, Jeff.
No problem. I'm going to be like a seal out there. I'm going to just kind of look for sunlight and lay in it. That's how I'm going to survive.
There you go. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, y'all.
That was our check-in from MetLife Stadium as the Saints get ready to take on the New York Giants. We're taking a break here on First Take. We'll be back right after this on WWL. Back here on First Take, I want to remind everybody, Venture Global donating $10 per Saints receiving yards to their Catch for the Coast program. This season, Venture Global innovating to provide low-cost LNG to the world. Their current donations, $26,950. Congratulations there, Venture Global. We're going to be taking a break and close things out right after this, so stay tuned for First Take. Back here on First Take, as we close things out, our Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak just putting out on Twitter, unless you're a Giants fan, because it's been 366 days since they have won a game in this building. Woof.
Oh,
for the Giants.
I remember it was that crazy stat about Daniel Jones, that like the gap in between touchdown passes thrown at MetLife Stadium was ridiculous as well. So yeah, it hasn't been a good time to be a Giants fan. As far as, you know, points per game and an opposing points per game, Steve, we talked a little bit about this with you off air. It's an 8-point gap for them. They average 15.3 points per game. They give up 23.3 points per game. And so, you know, it's about, we'll do a score prediction just in a little bit here. But they're minus 96 on the season in point differential. Go take care of business.
Right. The biggest issue I think we all know going into the game for the Saints defense is trying to slow down the G-men's run game. Tyrone Tracy Jr., obviously Drew Lock too, is a bit mobile. And Joe Woods, defensive coordinator, was asked about the issues and consistencies with this Saints run defense going into this game.
Yeah, you know, it was, we looked at it, cause it was frustrating during the game because we was working trying to figure it out. And trust me, I was calling everything we had. This in terms of trying to stop the run, but when you really look at it, it comes down to being assignment sound. We have to have better gap control. We have to have better discipline in our run fits. We have to tackle better. But that's what it really was. Because they had two explosive runs. So I think 159 yards rushing, they had two explosive runs. But there was a bunch of 8 and 9 yard runs. And that's what we got to eliminate. And it really comes down to playing responsibility football.
Joe Woods there talking about, obviously, the issues with the Saints' run defense. We saw Kyren Williams, I think it was, 5-point-something yards per carry last game. That's pretty the standard, unfortunately, this year for this Saints squad. They got to stop the run game.
It was 5.4 or 5.6 from one of the two. Yeah, Tyrone Tracy, 5 yards per carry this season. Once again, that's the one kind of piece that can scare you on this team. And it's in front of a banged-up offensive line, so, I mean, who knows if the holes will be there. The Saints just got to be up front, stout up front, against that banged-up offensive line and really kind of limit his opportunities to hurt him, because they really haven't been good in run defense. And, I mean, for a rookie averaging 5 yards per carry, that's the one spot you're a little bit worried about.
When we're doing our pick six, now pick eight this week, right. Selections.
We had the 2-point conversion.
I was kind of leery going into the game. It opened as Saints 3.5-point favorites. It's now up to 5, according to ESPN Bet. But I'm still definitely confident that this Saints team should be able to cover. I guess that's not confident if I'm saying should.
No, I mean, I felt pretty confident about it, minus 5. As Bobby would say, the Giants are bad. They're sorry, as he would say. But, like, you know what I mean? I would take Saints 24, Giants 13. That's my pick. So covering the 5 points, I feel pretty comfortable with it, too. It's just a team that's in the dumps.
Right. The Giants don't do anything well.
They're looking more to the 2025 draft than they are at the final 5 games of the season. And then, you know, if they finish this 2-15 season out, we'll see what happens with Brian Daboll and Joe Shane in the future. But that's not the Saints' problem. Just go in and get a win at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, obviously any game can tilt due to turnovers. The Giants' defense,
terrible.
While they've been getting pressure on the quarterback for the year, they haven't been generating those takeaways. Just one interception, and that was from a linebacker on a tip ball.
It's not a good secondary. It's not a good secondary. It's not a good defensive line without Dexter Lawrence there. So it's just like, you got to be able to take advantage of this team. Once again, I don't know, Steve. I got 24-13 for the Saints.
You mentioned the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. He is in studio as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown, the kickoff, which is coming up next here on WWL Saints Radio. I'm Steve Geller, along with Charlie Long. Also, Cullen Steele running master control right now. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back with more of our Saints coverage as they get ready to battle the 2-10 Giants right here on Saints Radio. A noon start in MetLife Stadium. Taking a break. We'll be right back.